First Baptist Church of Redmond, August 15th, 2021, Ecclesiastes Chapter 6, Trivial Pursuit.
Please rise and join me in reading Ecclesiastes 6, 1 through 2. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is widespread among mankind. A person to whom God has given riches, wealth, and honor, so that his soul lacks nothing of all that he desires. Yet God has not given him the opportunity to enjoy these things, but a foreigner enjoys them. This is futility and a severe affliction. You may be seated.
Many pursuits are trivial. I've titled my sermon, Trivial Pursuit, because the devil is in the details. Have you heard of Larry Ellison? What's he famous for? Oracle. What else is he famous for? Well, he's famous because there's different polls, but the poll I trust the most says he has the number 8 largest yacht in the world. He must have some wealth, yes? Yeah, you made money in Oracle. You can have any boat you want. But I discovered that he loves to play basketball. Rear deck is where he plays basketball with his friends. What are the dangers of playing basketball on a boat? What?
Losing the ball.
But I discovered that Larry Ellison, if a ball bounces over the railing, there's no problem. Why? Ellison has a powerboat following his yacht, the Wall Street Journal noted this past spring, to retrieve balls that go overboard. Wow. Talk about having made it. Talk about having some strong success. Ecclesiastes 6 is one of the most discouraging passages in the Bible. It even speaks of the death of an infant. As we hear what Solomon, the preacher, has to say, we're reading what the Russian poet Alexander Pushkin called Reason's Icy Limitations, and Records of a Heart in Pain. Jonathan Clemens reached a similar conclusion in the pages of the Wall Street Journal. It's bad. We may have life and liberty, he wrote, but the pursuit of happiness isn't going so well. The glow of satisfaction quickly fades, and soon we're yearning for something else. There's an evil which I have seen under the sun. We're still under the sun. And is widespread among mankind. Solomon previously said that the only way to try to find true satisfaction in life is to trust the God of joy. He said that in Ecclesiastes 5, 18, 19, and 20. Here is what I have seen to be good and fitting, to eat and drink, enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he labors under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him. And verse 20, for he will not often call to mind the years of his life because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. So when he's reflecting on joy, when he's reflecting on God, Solomon lifts his heart to pursue God. The rest of the book, I want to tell you, the rest of the book, chapters 2 through chapter 11 at least, is Solomon's sinful time because his wisdom had gone to seed. He was at a peak. God had given him riches, honor, blessing, and wisdom. And initially, he wrote the Proverbs. But he lost it. He thought too much. And like King Herod, he worried about other people more than he worried about God. So he tried everything but God to try and find satisfaction. He goes back to God at the end of his life. But I think that Ecclesiastes 6 at the beginning and the middle is Solomon's testimony. He didn't stay satisfied with God for long. Soon he was lamenting more of the problems he saw with life under the sun. A person, by the way, verse 2 starts the autobiographical part, in my opinion, of Ecclesiastes. A person to whom God has given riches, wealth, and honor, so that his soul lacks nothing of all he desires, yet God has not given him the opportunity to enjoy these things, but a foreigner enjoys them. This is futility and a severe affliction. I want to read part of 2 Kings chapter 1. God said to Solomon, because you had this in mind, and notice the comparison, and did not ask for riches, wealth, or honor, or the life of those who hate you, nor have you even asked for long life, but you have asked yourself for wisdom and knowledge, that you may rule over my people who have over whom I have made you king. Do you see any similarities? Do you see? It's intentional, I think. Solomon's probably thinking of himself with these words. The comparison, I think, if you read the whole chapter, is too clear. Solomon had honorable and envious status from God. Yet, he was not allowed to draw from the pleasure they can bring. No one should do everything they can do. Yes? Correct. Because if you do everything you can think of, I can think of sinful things. I can think of excessive things. I can think of wasteful things and foolish things. But Solomon did not withhold himself from everything. Solomon said yes to too many things. He couched it with the claim that he was seeking more wisdom and knowledge. But Ephesians chapter 5, for the Christian, tells us that there's some things we need to know nothing about. Many foreigners can steal them. Many foreigners, I think of foreigners in the context of there's joy stealers, and we can steal our own joy, or we can let people, other people, to influence us to steal our joy that God had waiting for us. Wow. If a father, a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, however they may be, but his soul is not satisfied with good things, and he does not even have a proper burial, then I say, better the miscarriage than he. Wow. Solomon says that an unborn child can be better off in his depression, in his depressed state, Solomon's depressed state, than anybody else. This is not a Mother's Day verse. We don't live under the illusion that our problems are solved by having many children. Solomon foresees an unfortunate future, for a miscarriage comes in futility and goes into darkness, and its name is covered in darkness. It does not even see the sun, nor does it know it, yet is better off than that man, that discouraged, that depressed man. He adds that a miscarriage, he feels, is better than the alternative. Why? He has no history to live up to. He hasn't been king. He hasn't excelled. He hasn't been held up as number one. When you're number one, the only place you can go is down. So if you're always trying to excel, always trying to succeed, at least you're trying, and at least you have an opportunity to climb the ladder. But if you're the top dog, you have a lonely whine. The tiny baby, now dead, has no problems to face. It's covered in darkness, covered with burial, obscurity. That's how depressed he was, because he was reflecting on his past. And while he came up for air in Ecclesiastes 5, 18, 19, and 20, he was reflecting on God's blessing. And Solomon, for a time, did not reflect on God's blessing. He tried it all, and he was dissatisfied. Even if a man lives to 1,000 years twice, wow, but does not see good things, do not all go to one and the same place. Now, Solomon adds another wild card, long life. But if life was marked with pain, calamity, tragedy, what good is it to add another 1,000 years? On the side, it has been my observation that people will want to seek an out who have those kinds of experiences, want to go to heaven faster, not slower. In my life, I saw many people die before their time. In my life, my real mother died at 33. My brother died at 50. I would say that I'm, unfortunately, one of the healthiest persons in my family, even with a stroke, because they had serious strokes. One of my brothers, who lived the longest, couldn't stand for the last 10 years of his life. Another brother suffered with oxygen for about 10 years. He had to carry a tank of oxygen. Why? No one knows why God distributes things that he does. But my experience has been, if you have misfortune, if you have sickness, if you have maladies, or if you have oppression, you think about heaven. If you're a Christian, you want to go there. And you want to go there faster, not slower. All a person's labor is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not satisfied. Well, next he considers adding hard work to find a fulfilling and meaningful, life. The word that's translated appetite is the words that's usually used for the word rendered soul. His soul is not satisfied. He's frustrated. He's angry. He's not happy. Hard work does not bring relief from depression if there are conflicts that feed the soul with discouragement. For what advantage does the wise person have over the fool? What does the poor person have knowing how to walk before the living? What about having a bright mind, wisdom? Some people cling to their education. Even a poor man's life, if it is marked by charm or charisma, they're no better off than those who are wise but unsatisfied. Solomon now seems to stop itself and reflect on what he's tried before. What the eyes see is better than what the soul desires. This too is futility and striving after wind. Many children, more wives, Solomon was an expert, more years, harder work, better education. No. It won't work. It doesn't work in that combination if you have the wrong perspective. Have you heard of this book? God is Not Great. Christopher Hitchens was not like his brother, Peter Hitchens. I don't know if you knew he had a brother, but Peter Hitchens wrote a reply. I'm the only one that read it, but Peter Hitchens wrote a reply to his brother's book, Christopher's. And he extolled faith in God, hope in God, hope in heaven, but I haven't read the book because I won't read it. But he claims that religion, Christopher Hitchens, religions poisons everything. He makes an argument from design. Hitchens says that Abrahamic religions, he's particularly hard on Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, specifically. Abrahamic religions are used to make people feel like lonely sinners. Hitchens lists anachronisms and inconsistencies in the Old Testament, stating that many of the gruesome, disordered events never took place. On the subject of the mythical Jesus and the possibility of the historical Jesus, a number of sources quote them, Jesus is Santa Claus for adults, to Hitchens. whatever exists has been already named, and it is known what man is, for he cannot dispute with the one who is mightier than he is. You may say to yourself, what does it matter? Or really, does God exist? If you're honest with yourself, your mind may have gone there when you have bad luck, when you have discouragement or depression. I've heard that even health problems cause people to reflect, what is God trying to say to me? First, God is sovereign. The Creator established His authority over creation by naming day, night, the expanse, the Beaver Canopy, waters, land, seas, and man. God asserts control and authority by giving us names. My parents could really name their kids. And I'm glad they broke the cycle with Clayton Douglas Johnston. They're all normal names. But I have a brother named Jerome Wilburn. Okay. David Milton. Okay. My mother was named Catherine Dale, but she was not named after a girl. My father's name was Russell Dale. So she was named after my dad, and he could get away with it, but Dale is sometimes a guy's name, but they didn't know it. And she always thought, Dale, it's a girl's name. My parents could really name them. I tried not to do that to you, by the way. We talked about it. Ask me about Dagobert one day. That was the dean name they were using. From this side of glory, we see not the way it looks from heaven, but if you look at the wrong side of a quilt or a tapestry, you see all the knots, all the mistakes, all the tied ends, and it's a different view from the back side of a quilt than the front side of a quilt, because we don't look at it from heaven's perspective. From this side of glory, we see the tapestry with all the knots. From God's perspective, it's all under control. God is sovereign. Okay? Think of that when life gives you the answers you don't want to hear. Second, for there were many words which increase futility. What then is that advantage to a person? Second, you know it, humanity is not in control. We maybe control a lot of things. We may be a lot of things, but sovereign is not one of them. God is the potter. You know the verse, we are the clay. God is infinite. We are very finite. We have limits. God is all powerful. We are limited. God is faithful. That's the number one thing about God that we can trust, because once He says something, He means it. God is faithful. God's promises to me are yea and amen. But we are inconsistent. confused, uncertain, mistaken, and sometimes downright wrong. Only God is faithful to everything that he says. For who knows what is good for a person during his lifetime, during the few years of his few life? He will spend them like a shadow. For who can tell a person what will happen after him under the sun? Third, that's where Solomon was at the majority of his life, I think. Disputing with God is a waste of time and effort. Do you agree? It may be bad, it may be good, but disputing with God is a waste. So long as I fight the hand of God, I do not learn the lessons he has attempting to show me. He is totally responsible for my life as he is with all created things. So, if God is in my life, he is in both my needs and my attempts to satisfy the things I really need. I appreciate having a family because you remember I didn't want children, and I might try one of them. So I frequently tell you all that your life is based on Craig, because Craig was a good kid, and it encouraged me to have more. So you all owe your life to Craig. You can leave him gifts now. But he was a good kid. Similarly, God's life is distributed to me and distributed to you, and he ultimately is responsible. He's not responsible for my choices. He's not responsible for my foul-ups. He's not responsible for the things I did wrong. But as God is willing, he's able to fix it. He's able to provide for me. The less I mess up my life, the more God is able to bless me. So, disputing with God, are you rich or poor? Are you good looking, or is one ear above another? Is one of your eyes crooked? Have you had a stroke recently? Ha ha ha. He's totally responsible, and he makes provisions for us. For us. I left the same moniker up because money has never yet made anyone rich. I love that quote. Don't let the size of humanity get greater than the size of my God. We were reminded about it in our Sunday school lesson about Herod. Herod knew what to do. He protected John the Baptizer, and he knew it was wrong to kill him, but for ego's sake, and because he made a promise, he did the wrong thing. He worried about people more than he worried about God. Even a capable but strong-willed King Solomon couldn't fight a winning battle against his God. I think about half Solomon's life was spent in rebellion against his God. He knew what he should do. He would find that he was blessed above measure, But he began to question. He began to ponder. Instead of saying, "Thus saith the Lord," he said, "Maybe I'll try this." God is working on our lives. Don't fight against him. I have a diagnostic question for you. Does life seem futile? The more you dwell on the solution for that question, the answer for that question, the more you're asking the wrong question. I watched something with Barbara yesterday, and I didn't know it. Think about Spain, the Spanish Paralympics. And they had Paralympics for ages. In 2000, the Spanish basketball team won gold at the Paralympics. These are supposedly handicapped people, but they won the gold medal. But I have the same picture here. They lied. They weren't disabled at all. Out of 12 Spanish basketball players, all of whom said they had a disability, only two were telling the truth. The other 10 had no disability at all. It wasn't the only Spanish basketball team that had this occur. Out of the 200 Spanish athletes at Sydney, the City Olympics in 2000, at least 15 had no type of physical or mental handicap. They didn't even pass or fail medical or psychological examination. Why? Because it was suspected that Spain was trying to cheat in the Paralympic Games. So, a journalist tried out for and made the Spanish basketball team. And he documented behind the scenes in the locker room, and he heard all the conversations. Fernando Martin Vicente, the chairman of the Spanish Sports Federation for the Intellectual Handicapped, even denied the accusation, saying, it could not possibly happen. But it was true. A man named Ribalgarda. Ribalgarda said he was invited to compete with the basketball team just months prior to the Paralympics, despite being an able-bodied man. He also shared that he was not required to take a test for disability. In fact, the only test he was asked to do was, "Can you do 6 push-ups?" You can, you make the gold medal basketball team. Life doesn't seem fair, does it? It certainly wasn't fair for the other competitors at basketball in the 2000 Sydney Games. But life may not be fair. Life may not be a winning game for you. But, and I say but, even if it's true, you're better off knowing, trusting, and believing in God, because you have a future. You have a future in heaven. And I don't know if Larry Ellison's boat, I don't know if Larry Ellison's a believer. I suspect that he's not. But he'll one day wish to swap places with you, a believer, than have memories of playing basketball at his yacht. Because you will see the tapestry from the right side. See the things that God was weaving in the course of your life. And hear him say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter in to the joy of your Lord."